perfection. A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now? How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Hey, hold up. That's Edgar Dean's.
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
Is that a snake?
I'll give you boys $5 for this.
20.
That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
What the hell? Those things. How could they eat a whole station wagon?
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
You didn't get penetration even with the alpha gun.
Run, run!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or... or suckwitch.
Now, it's up to Val and Earl to save the world.
That's one big mother.
Who died and made you Einstein?
And they know just what to do. Flip for it.
Damn.
Kevin Bacon. Fred Ward. Tremors.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast. We are your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The Movie Buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Welcome back, Real Talk community. It's been a while since our last episode, and this week we're going to wrap up our Halloween spooktacular month. And we've had some really fun episodes. We had Wes take us on a trip through The Shining and had to regale my horrors of my childhood. Then Tommy did maybe the most spectacular draft when I spontaneously combusted during. And now today, we've traveled to Scarefest in Lexington, and we're back and we're doing Tremors today. And we have a spectacular guest and a lot of things exciting about this episode. Tremors is one of my all-time favorite creature features, so I'm just pumped to bring this episode to you. We recently did the original Dune, and we had some spectacular cinematic worms in that one. And to steal from the theatrical masterpiece Men in Black 2, once you go worm, that's what you yearn. I'm going to go ahead and bring in some of my guest stars. First, Tommy. He's been a big Tremors fan for a long time. Tommy, are you excited to talk worms tonight?
Thanks, Gabe. Man, yeah, I love Tremors. Always have. But I don't want to talk about worms. You're already starting off with this worm talk. I told you I'm not a big worm fan.
Okay.
So I'm hoping tonight is not going to be a lot of worms. And I also got to talk about, Gabe, you did combust in that last episode. Are you regretting yet that pick you had of 28 Weeks Later? I just want to ask that. Have you regretted that pick? Because everybody else regrets it. I just want to know if you do. Yeah.
Let me tell you, the Real Talk community is an embracing community. It's a loving community. After you guys berated me relentlessly in our text message thread, the Real Talk community, like Wes suspected, came to my rescue. They surrounded me, they embraced me, and uplifted me. For a while there, even List B was winning. So picking with your heart felt really good. Now it's turned on a terrible downslide. But, you know, the Real Talk community did what they could. So I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I don't believe any of that. I don't believe you feel good about that pick. And I'm willing to go keep at it until I get you to admit the true feelings you have about that pick. But that's enough for now.
Well, T-Man, you said that you regretted everybody regrets it. But I didn't, actually. I was loving watching The Meltdown because all these good movies just kept falling to me. So I think it's the best draft you've ever had, Gabe.
Wes, I don't know if you know the rules. Like, you can't speak until I've brought you into the episode.
Hey, you did that last time. I thought we just had a green light to do that now.
No, I didn't. I waited patiently. That was the whole thing. And the longest I'd gone without talking. Anyway, well, so
yeah, Wes, I forgot I did edit you out because I remember you were going to cut in, then you stopped, and I wound up editing that out. So, yeah, technically you're right.
So our next host, Wes Jones, who rudely interrupted earlier. Wes, are you excited to talk some Tremors today?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to talk Tremors. Of course, you guys know me. I like to be prepared. I like to, be organized and get everything set up to try to put on a good show for the listeners. And I have no clue where we're going. And I told you before the episode, T-Man was like, hey, I'm just ready for anything. And I've tried to do that tonight. I've layered up with the deodorant. I'm trying to relax enough so we can just let our hair down, so to speak, and see what kind of wormholes you're going to take us down.
Ooh, I like the pun. I really do.
Real quick, Gabe. So Gabe has done enough to get Wes out of his comfort zone. I'm interested to see how Wes reacts without that layer of security, that security blanket you have. So well, how are you going to act, Wes? Are you going to be ready?
I'm liable to just freeze up. And luckily, I'll be able to just fix it in editing and just cut out like the 10 seconds of panic. And so we're just going to see what happens tonight.
Hey, that's all right. What people don't realize is we have to cut out like hours of footage anyway.
Hours.
If you think we're bad on the episodes, which we usually are, we're really bad like live. So
The outtakes. Yeah, the outtakes are a disaster. People kept saying, you know, you guys should just go on YouTube and stuff. It's like, well, I'm not going to figure out how to edit video, because if we put these 6-hour episodes of us just rambling and just knocking, you know, our microphones over and just all the chaos that goes on, you know what? People might actually like us better.
Yeah, I think they would. For this episode, we had a Saw expert on. There was a guy, he said, he's pretty famous. I mean, he's been on some of our biggest episodes, Mortal Kombat, stuff like that. And he was like, if you guys ever do Tremors, I got to come on that episode. And I was like, well, let me go ahead and wrangle us a big guest star. So I went ahead and got Preston. He's here tonight and he's pumped to talk some worms. So Preston, what are you most excited to talk about on Tremors?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm excited to be back. You know, I got the text messages saying, hey, we want to do another episode coming up. We've got this great movie. You know, we got two cowboys out on their own. It's a fantastic movie. You know, I thought that y'all were going to bring me on for the big stuff like Brokeback Mountain and say we got Tremors. But yeah, I mean, I'm super excited. What? You know, the first 5 minutes of the movie feels like Brokeback Mountain. So, you know, I feel like it might be the same universe.
I can see that.
I think it's a prequel. You know, I really
Brokeback Mountain's cinematic universe.
I love it. First off, I love Brokeback Mountain. That's a great movie. And I'd be down for doing that episode if anybody wants to, anytime.
Well, we're going to do it tonight.
All right, perfect.
The prequel. All right, Tremors. Right, guys? Harkens back to the days of watching USA and TNT. Just like Preston said, if he was watching one of my movies on USA TNT, he'd be pumped up. He could just pick it up. I explained to my kid that we had to wait to watch movies and told him about commercials, and he looked at me like I was a liar. By Netflix standards, I have seen Tremors 20,121 times. However, most of the time, I've only seen like 15 to 20 minutes of it on TV. I've always loved it. But this most recent rewatch was the first time I'd watched it all the way through in a long time. And it's sad because it's such a good movie, but it was just one of those movies I'd pick up and sit down. I felt like if, you know, TNT or USA didn't have anything planned back in the day, they just throw on a Tremors, like, you know, they'd have a Tremors marathon. Or if they, you know, they were like, crap, we don't have anything today, they'd just be like, boom, you know what? Don't worry, Dave. We can just throw on a Rocky marathon, you know. And so some of my best times back in the day were spending the afternoon just watching whatever movie was on TNT or USA. Nothing screamed a full afternoon for me like a big Mel Gibson double feature like Boom, Daylight, and then Ransom. Or a Nick Cage double feature like The Rock, and then Boom, Con Air. Or Wes, what about this one? What about some Face Off followed by Boom, Operation Swordfish? How does that sound for an afternoon?
Sounds pretty rough.
Yeah, it's the second one that got you. But anyway, so T-Man, I know that you remember this too, because we've talked about it. What were some of your favorite movies that came on all the time on USA and TNT back in the day?
Yeah, man. The USA TNT weekend, marathon, as I like to call it. You know, usually it would start at like 10 a.m. on Saturday, and it would literally just go straight through till Sunday night. And, you know, there was a couple things I loved about it. And this was really big in our childhood. Really before streaming became such a thing, I would say probably the 90s going into the 2000s was its heyday of the TNT, USA, maybe a little TBS, throw a little TBS in it too also. Yeah. That's TBS. When, yeah, that's when it was at its height, I would say. They would take these movies that were maybe 5 to 10 to 15 years old. Sometimes the movie were hits, sometimes they weren't, like Tremors. And they would basically just play them over and over again until you literally knew exactly what would be on every given weekend. It would be, you know, usually it would start out with maybe Braveheart, which is always weird when it's like 10 a.m. And then you would see that Braveheart's on for approximately 6 hours because they would have 3 hours worth of commercials. I'm not joking. These movies had so many commercials. I didn't know if the, like, what was more, the movie or the commercials. That's what I always loved about it. So you always knew that you had to block out like a 4 to 5 hour span for these movies. And then, you know, you'd go Braveheart. Usually they'd throw in, like you said, Gabe, Con Air. They would definitely throw it in Con Air. And it never failed on USA on Saturday at around 2 or 3 o'clock p.m. USA would have Tremors on. For some reason, Tremors was a USA movie. They always played it. What was good about Tremors, though, if I remember correctly, is that it's not a super long movie, so it could get done in about 2 hours, maybe a little bit more than 2 hours. So they could. That's why I think one reason they could keep replaying it over and over again. So, yeah, I just have a lot of great memories of, you know, growing up, and, you know, you didn't, maybe you didn't go to the Blockbuster that weekend, or you weren't going to the movie, so he's like, I still want to watch a movie. Let's turn on USA, TNT, let's see what's going on.
Couldn't agree more. You said it better than I did. Preston, I feel like you remember some good USA and TNT movies. What do you got for us? What do you remember watching back in the day? Is it some Rocky IV?
Well, it's hilarious that T-Man mentions Braveheart, because that's kind of the first one that hits me. You know, I'm 90% sure that they probably started playing that around 1999. And oddly enough, with all the commercials, it's actually the same one. It hasn't even ended. It's still playing on USA Play. You know, that movie's like a 3 hour runtime without commercials. So I know when we were talking about this earlier, you know, it just like popped into my head. I'll kind of flip a question back on you. Which actor do you think had the biggest boost from this? Do you think it was Mel Gibson or Tom Hanks?
Either Mel Gibson, Tom Hanks, or Nick Cage. I mean, Nick Cage is in every movie on TNT and USA. Let's just put him in every movie.
Tom Hanks had a great run there on TNT because he would have Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump was always on these cable channels. He would have Castaway. Then you got to bring in the sneaky good Tom Hanks from the 80s, which would be his 80s, comedy runs. So they would do The Burbs. They would do Splash. They would do Big. And so he had kind of different runs there. So I really think probably Tom Hanks is the biggest winner from the cable clashes of the 90s.
I feel like Tom, you know, he probably, when he was choosing scripts around then, you know, that I feel like he probably chose Saving Private Ryan because he's like, oh, yeah, you know, every Memorial Day and 4th of July, right, they're going to see me. I'm going to be on TNT.
They even brought him up back in the funny rom-coms with You've Got Mail. I feel like You've Got Mail used to come on USA and TNT later on in life.
That was a TNT one. You make a great point about Saving Private Ryan because I just thought of something. So there was a special thing about TNT and USA and all these cable channels where on the weekends, and it'd usually be Sunday night at 7 p.m., and it would usually be like some anniversary or something, holiday. They'd be like, now we're going to do a very special movie. And they would do limited commercials. So they would do like only like 2 commercials the entire movie, and they would do unedited. So Saving Private Ryan would be one of those where they wouldn't edit it, and they would be like, your discretion advised. This is an unedited movie, which was very rare back then. Another one they used to do that for was Schindler's List. Schindler's List, unedited, very rare. But, you know, you knew you were getting something special when they would go the unedited route.
Well, I think they also did that with The Patriot, too.
All right, now they're just stretching it.
That's pretty stretchy. All right. I love The Patriot because I love me some Mel Gibson. Like,
I mean it's a fun movie, but I don't think that needs unedited. That's not unedited.
Keep the edits.
Keep the edits.
Wes, is there any movies that you like really loved back in the day on TNT? Are you mad we didn't talk about Days of Thunder yet?
You guys are honestly talking a little bit outside of my realm. I think I've mentioned it on the show before that I didn't grow up with cable. We didn't get cable until I was in high school. And obviously, you know, when you get in high school, there's all kinds of other things that are going on. So I'm just, what I would do was always go to the video rental store. You know, I'd stay with my grandmother a lot back then. She would take me to little movies and more in Franklin, and I would rent a couple movies for the weekend. So I really don't have very many memories of catching movies on cable. Now, every once in a while, whenever you had a little antenna, you might get the Saturday night movie whenever you would see a couple weeks in advance, you know, like 89's Batman or Terminator 2 or something like that was going to come on. Then you'd get your VCR ready to record. You try to find you a tape, or you just grab your parents' wedding video and start recording Batman right in the middle of it. You know, that's the type of stuff that was going on in my house.
I think we just answered our question, T-Man. This is why Wes doesn't like fun movies.
I think we figured it out. Wes doesn't know the cable weekend marathons. Now that's, we know.
That's why he didn't fall in love with Rocky IV. That's why he missed all this stuff. That's why he sat about Face Off, even though somebody sent him 37 copies in the mail.
You can't just throw that out there and not. You got to set up and you got to tell the story. So probably about 10 years ago, I went out to my mailbox. There was a package addressed to me, and I was like, what the heck is this? I open it up. It's a VHS copy of the movie Face Off. And I was like, okay. And I was like, one of the guys sent it to me, you know, no big deal. And I've just brought it inside and kind of got a little chuckle out of it. Well, the next day I go out there and there's another VHS copy of Face Off. The next day, third day in a row, one of my other friends, his name is Tony, he was over at the house. He just stopped by for a minute. And I said, dude, the mail just ran. The last couple of days, I've received copies of Face Off, the VHS, in the mail. And he was like, what are you talking about? I was like, I swear, you know, I've been getting VHS copies of Face Off. I said, let's go check. I bet there's another one in there. Open up the mailbox. Sure enough, another VHS copy of Face Off. And I'm not kidding. I probably received 10 of them over the next couple of weeks. Well, I know, obviously, I'm pretty sure I have it pinpointed, like who is doing it. A hilarious joke that you just keep getting. They were ordered off of eBay, but obviously there was no name on it to find out like who ordered it. No order number, nothing like that. So it goes dormant for probably 6-7 years. I get a package at work, at my work, addressed to me at Fruit of the Loom where I work. Open it up, Face Off on VHS. Now, I saved that one. The rest of them I just dumped in the garbage, but I have that one here. So that's what Gabe's referring to with Face Off.
Man, I wish you wouldn't have thrown those away. I was really in need of another Face Off VHS. That's kind of sad.
Well, you can pick them up anytime you want for about 50 cents off eBay.
Oh, good to know. So I'll claim to be our resident Tremors historian, and I'll take you through some fun facts. This is taken from Mental Floss. I just picked three of these because I like them, and it'll set you up for our walkthrough we're getting ready to do. S.S. Wilson came up with the idea for this movie. He was on a hike. He was standing on a rock, and he was like, what if something was underground and I couldn't get off this rock? That's how Tremors was born. I just think that's funny because I always kind of thought it was kind of similar to sharks, and we're going to talk about the next point.
But Gabe, to your point on that fun fact, it's, you know, you hear that people will say who thinks of this stuff? You know, people will say that every now and then about some kind of crazy concept for a movie. And I'm glad you shared that. I always think it's funny whenever you do get the true story of how they really got going down this path of these gigantic worms with snakes coming out of their mouth and out of their head and stuff like that. And it was literally, like you said, this dude just hanging out on a rock and then thinking, well, what if I couldn't get off because there was something that was going to get me? And anyway, it's always interesting to hear these origin stories of movies like this.
Yeah, he must have had a buddy brain because it went from what if I couldn't get off this rock to what if these phallic-shaped worms were chasing me all over the face of the earth, and what if we had Kevin Bacon? But, you know, I don't know how he got from A to B, but I could see how it could happen. I always wondered if Tremors was created because sharks couldn't live on land. Like, I thought I was this genius, but then I looked it up and I found out a bunch of stuff on it. I was like, sharks are so scary because when you're in the ocean, you can't see underneath of you, so you don't know where they are. They could be anywhere. And I was always like, well, what if there was sharks on land that could be under the dirt? Because that'd be terrifying because they could be literally anywhere. And guess what? This is where the idea came from. So the original title was Land Sharks, but they had to take it out because Saturday Night Live already had a character that was a spoof to Jaws called Land Shark, also a great name of a beer that came out later on. But they had to change the name because they didn't want to duplicate SNL's skit. I don't remember the skit. Does anybody remember that skit?
Yeah, the skit is super famous. It's where they would knock on the door, and then they would come in, and they'd be like, who is it? And I can't remember how they did the joke exactly, but then the shark would come in and eat the person, basically. It's always in those montages of famous SNL skits, because I think it was one of their really first big breakthrough skits that they had in the late 70s.
The last two facts aren't that cool. I guess they call the worms technically, I'm going to call them worms because I just like it better, but they're technically called graboids. And some of the graboid pictures were too phallic. They had to be changed, the original ones, which they look pretty phallic to me now. I don't know what you guys think, but it was so bad. Like, people were passing around the pictures and laughing at them in the studio. So they were like, we've got to change this up. I mean, do you guys think that they're a little questionable? Am I the only one?
But I never, like, I've watched this movie like 100 times and I've never gotten that out of it.
No. That has never once crossed my mind. I guess I don't think about penises inching through the dirt either. So I don't know where that comes from.
I guess it was pretty popular opinion. All right, last thing. Kevin Bacon thought this movie was the low point in his career. He even claims to have screamed at his pregnant wife about doing a movie with underground worms, thinking it would ruin him. Guess what, Kevin? The Tremorverse thanks you for doing the movie anyway. Those are my Tremors fun facts. Does anybody have any fun facts they would like to add?
Well, I got a fun fact to add. You know, a fun fact that I heard about was, you know, our good friend Preston here that we're so glad to have on the episode. You know, he's talked about Tremors for years now. And even after the Mortal Kombat episode that we did, you know, over a year ago, he even talked about how I want to do the next episode as Tremors. And then we get on tonight and he says, I forgot, I don't even like this movie. So, Preston, that fun fact that I just learned about is that you've lied to us about Tremors for years now. What do you have to say for yourself?
T-Man, if you've not realized yet, everything I say is sarcasm in life. You can't take anything I say seriously. But I will pull a 180 on the 180 from earlier. I do enjoy Tremors. It's honestly, I want to do this episode with you all because this is a movie that, honestly, I've watched it when I was a kid and never thought anything of it because I probably saw it on TNT. And I remember being in college and being over at your all's apartment at College Suites, and it was one of the movies that we played on a late Monday night. And it just, all the inside jokes, which I'm sure we're going to get into, is just something that, I don't know, I found the movie so over the top in areas, and the acting, and Kevin Bacon, I'm pretty sure, negotiated his contract on how many times he can say a line twice, because he does it like every other line.
What the hell's going on? I mean, what the hell is going on? Can you fly, you sucker? Can you fly?
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch! Get up on your roofs! Up on your roofs!
And it's one of the movies that just stuck with me. So it's like Mortal Kombat. I know it's not a great movie. I know a lot of people probably haven't seen it, and they probably won't go watch it. But it's a fun movie to talk about, and it's very entertaining to get a group of people together and just kick back, relax, and relive it. I haven't watched this movie all the way through in probably 10 years until last night. So I rented it on my TV upstairs, and I ended up starting it late and fell asleep. So I paid $5 to rent it on that TV. Didn't realize the TV downstairs wasn't linked to my Amazon account. So I've spent about $15 to finish this movie in 2 days so far. So we're going to pump out some quality content.
Money well spent, Preston. I appreciate that.
I can't think of a better place to put money. All right,
and guys. Gabe, real quick, the final thing I was going to say is on that, you know, I'd read that about Kevin Bacon, how originally he was not happy about taking the movie, but ultimately he turned into a fan of it, and I think he really appreciates being part of Tremors, so much so that I know they tried to actually do a reboot, or not really a reboot, a legacy sequel, I guess you would say, on the Sci-Fi channel, and somehow Sci-Fi didn't pick it up. It kind of blows my mind, honestly.
Like, yeah, I don't understand that.
Do you think he was on the set of Hollow Man just saying, man, I wish I could go back and do Tremors again?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, it blows my mind. But then, I think, you know, how much Sci-Fi channel has ruined itself after Battlestar Galactica, and I'm like, it makes sense that they would pass on it.
Yeah.
Well, he said that Tremors was the single most fun time that he had ever had making a movie. And like Gabe said earlier, he thought it was going to ruin his career. He also claims that it's the only one of his movies that he's actually ever sat down and rewatched, you know, that he was in, just to kind of see how everything turned out. But the one thing, you know, he acts like he likes it so much, but I did read for the 30th anniversary of the movie, which was just last year. Now, obviously, it could be COVID related, but whenever they had the 30-year anniversary and invited everybody to come, that he did not show up, and most of the rest of the cast didn't show up. My goodness, I can't think of his name. Michael Gross. Sorry. Michael Gross is the only one who actually showed up for the 30th anniversary. Kevin talking out of both sides of his mouth. Hey, listeners. If you've been listening to our recent episodes, you've been hearing about the epic sci-fi book series Shadowed Stars by author Stephen Couts. We're so excited to have Steven as a partner of Real Talk a Movie podcast because Shadowed Stars incorporates all the aspects of storytelling that most of us movie fans love. As the movie buddy always says, he likes when the story transports the audience to a different world, and that's exactly what Steven is doing with the book series. Shadowed Stars is an epic science fiction series, but as we learned on our recent interview series episode with Steven, he likes to incorporate other genres into his books, such as romance, horror, action, and even westerns, which I love that approach. Now, I do want to caution that Shadowed Stars is for a mature audience, so I don't recommend tucking the kids into bed while reading chapters from the book. It being for a mature audience is another aspect that I think is very unique, as we normally don't get that with other sci-fi epics. Steven has 8 numbered books planned in the series. The odd numbered books will focus on one line of characters. The even numbered books will focus on another line of characters, with some cameos mixed in. This helps to keep the stories fresh and the character arcs forming over the entire series. Listeners, I can't encourage you enough to check out Shadowed Stars. Book 1 is available now, and so is Book 2, Shadowed Stars, The Reign of the Black Guard. Steven is hopeful that Book 3 will be available by the end of 2021. Now, where can you purchase these books? Book 1 and 2, again, available now. Head over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, iTunes, you name it. For more information on Shadowed Stars and author Stephen Couts, visit shadowedstarsbooks.com.
You guys want to talk about anything else before we get into our walkthrough and spoil the crap out of Tremors?
Let's do it, Gabe.
I've been ready for this my whole life. So what I'm going to give you guys, I'm so excited to do Wes's feel, is this is a group of sequences. Then you can comment and tell me what you remember if you want to talk about anything during that group. So sequence 1, the movie opens up with a man taking a leak off a cliff with some cows mooing in the background. Who is that man? None other than Kevin Bacon. After his leak, Kevin pulls the old stampede joke on his sleeping buddy. They head to their weekly task of picking up garbage and notice a random girl standing in a field. So what do? Swerve off the road to check her out. She says she's a seismologist and there's some missing equipment. Foreshadowing. Next, they stop at Chang's to grab some beer. It cuts back to the girl Rhonda in the field and she barely averts being eaten by a creature under the ground. It then cuts back to Kevin and his buddy and they collect the garbage, then drink more beer, then empty out a septic tank, and poop shoots all over them. They pack up and decide as enough's enough. We're moving away. They even decline free beer on their way out of town. What do you guys think about this first series of events?
Oh, I love this first series of events because every time I start watching Tremors again, you know, I don't watch it all the time, but it usually takes a few years in between my viewings. I'm always trying to figure out, once again, what the hell do these guys do? What are their jobs? What are they doing in this valley? Why are they like doing all these different things? I've never been able to quite figure it out, even though I've seen this movie so many different times.
Why do they live in a town with 14 people? And the only thing that I think that I can think that they do is they seem to just be like just cowboys for hire, because, you know, well, they're negotiating themselves on the way out of town, and or when they're trying to leave, and they're like, hey, if you know, I got steady work for you for the next couple months, and you know, free beers, and you know, they kind of consider it for a minute.
Right. Well, and they do say that they're handymen. They're like, they mention that sometimes. They're like, we're handymen. But it's still, it's just like, it just does not seem a very stable job, especially because they're literally sleeping, you know, in the back of their truck.
Well, so, it's funny, like, if you, what, like, probably the first 3 minutes of it, I feel like, are probably the funniest parts in the movie, because Earl, when he's in the back of the truck and he comes out of it, what does he look like in that sleeping bag with the red hat on? He looks just like a graboid, like, right in the first, like, 20 seconds of the movie. Like, just go back and check that. It's like a foreshadowing. And then one of the, probably the funniest part of the movie is, of course, they're repairing that fence line that they've been hired to, you know, work on. At the end, or about mid-movie, you kind of realize why the fence poles are coming down is because the graboids are going around underneath them. So they're out there working on this fence post. Well, a couple things to show that they're very incompetent at what they do is they pull the barbed wire on top of the post. Well, that barbed wire doesn't go on top of posts. It goes on the sides of posts. So that's the first thing they do wrong. The second thing is
that. Yeah.
The second thing while they're doing it is the post is wobbling. So they haven't even put the post in the ground. They're just tacking the barbed wire back. And then the third thing, Kevin Bacon actually just did this out of the blue, is when they go to hammer in those wire nails, the little round or U-shaped ones, if you watch him, he just starts banging on each side of it with a hammer. So he's not even hitting the nail. And he does that like 10 times, finally hits the nail, and they just walk off. That wasn't in the script. Kevin Bacon just walked up and did that out of the blue, which I find is hilarious. Just these guys are supposed to be handyman, and he can't even hit the nail.
I wondered why it wasn't going down. Then all of a sudden he hits it once and it goes down. I guess he was just missing it the entire time.
Well, one thing that has always stuck out to me about Tremors, and I think is part of the reason why the movie continues to endure, is there something about this dynamic between Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward, you know, Valentine, good old Val and Earl, that they just seem like just such like everyday average guys, and they're just so likable. I don't know if you guys disagree with me or not, but I just find both characters likable. You know, them together is just, there's really good chemistry on camera. And so, although there's really not much happens, you know, some toilet humor, which T-Man loves so much, and, you know, them just kind of walking around, just mindlessly doing handyman work, but they're still interesting and they still kind of get your attention just because of the chemistry both of them had together.
I thought you were going to say something completely different. I thought you were going to say what was always enduring about it to me was the fact that your grocery store can also be a bar. And that was what I was always intrigued. I was like, Chang's is a bar and it's a grocery store? You have to go to a small town to get that? Why doesn't, you know?
It's literally everything. It's everything. It's probably a post office too. You know, you just, everything in one in that. Perfection, 14, population 14.
Think about how IRS needs to like audit Chang over there, because he's got to be evading taxes or money laundering or something to own a grocery store in that town and still turn a profit. Something's going on there.
Think about how awesome it'd be to walk into Kroger and they just pop the top off a beer for you and hand it to you, and you can do your, you know, it just really was enduring to me. Is there anything anybody else wants to say about this sequence? Do you like easy they just give up on life and leave?
Well, wouldn't you? Look at their life.
That's true.
But I do want to, but this sequence is really, it's a good opening sequence just to kind of get your bearing straight of what's going on in kind of this small world that they've got set up. You know, perfection is kind of a neat idea to place this movie in, because it's like, it's just so unusual that there's just this extremely small town of 14 people, I think it said, and, you know, like a different characters. I've always noticed how like grungy the town is. This is no disrespect to anybody that's listening to a town that, you know, is really grungy with all sorts of trash in their yards. But every place, like house, settlement, whatever you want to call it, has like junk everywhere. It's just so junky, this town. So I don't, but it adds some character to it. I guess that's what I'm going for here. It's like there's, it's just interesting, kind of the setting. It's very unusual. And I think it adds something to the movie, kind of piques your interest right away. It's like, this is just kind of different than what I'm used to of a typical movie setting, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of gets your interest from there.
Yeah, like, I agree. I think the setting is perfect for this type of story too. Obviously, you know, it would be interesting to see, you know, the tremors or the graboids, you know, let loose in like a heavy populated area, you know, somewhere downtown. But this is just, it's supposed to just be kind of a peaceful, forgotten about area. And it kind of makes sense a little bit, you know, for this setting to house these creatures that have, you know, are probably supposed to be thousands of years old or whatever they are, that they're just in this remote part of the desert. And, you know, they act like the nearest town is a long way away through the mountains and all that. So I agree. I love this setting. And I think they probably had to do it. They probably had to find a place that was very easy to dig up and to show the graboids moving through the ground. So I think you needed to have the loose dirt and sand of a desert area.
Well, I do know where they shot this, or some of the scenes for it, is where they shot the opening sequence of Iron Man in 2008. And then there's another big movie I can't think of right now.
Yeah, there's another big movie too. I forgot what it was.
But yeah, I mean, to T-Man's point, Wes's as well, you know, it's, I feel like with all of us being from Western Kentucky, we all knew guys like this, and we knew towns like this where, you know, there's mowers in the front yard and a boat on the side, and, you know, it's just kind of left in decay. But then you walk up and sit on the porch and, you know, have a beer with people and just relax. And the feel and the vibe that they put out on this, you know, that's kind of, I think, what makes it endearing for me is, you know, I grew up helping out my grandfather on the horse farm. And Earl and Val is 90% of the guys on, you know, those types of places out there doing farm work. So very relatable to that. And one question I do have, who is Melvin's dad in this movie? Or who's his mom?
The state.
That's a good point.
I don't know. Melvin is such an 80s character. I kind of was noticing that. You can just kind of see him. He feels like he should have been like in the Wonder Years or something like that. He reminds me of Kevin's older brother, Wayne, in the Wonder Years. But I was like, this is an 80s character for sure.
Yeah, he's like a little, you know, asshole running around town. But where's the kid's parents at? You know,
I was also trying to figure out where he lives. Does he live in that little shed?
Yeah,
there's a lot of questions around this town. I'm sure we could take a deep dive into the Tremors logistics of the town if we wanted to.
Now let's move on to sequence number two. On their way out of town, they find some random dude named Edgar passed out on some power structure. Kevin bitches, but decides to go up and help him. Turns out he's dead. Then a random old man minding his own business, hoeing his already thriving garden for no reason, gets eaten by a worm too. Kevin's on his way out of town, and they uncover some random dead farmer's animals. When they look further into it, they see a suspicious hat in the middle of the field. Turns out there's a head underneath of it. They also find a worm tentacle. A random construction guy and his jackhammer get drug off into a cliff and cause some rocks to fall down on the road that will prevent Kevin and his chum from leaving town altogether. Oh well. The boys go back to Chang's bar/grocery, where Chang's offers to buy the piece of worm for $15, and he does. What do you guys think about this sequence of events?
Gabe, I got to say, first off, you're doing great with these segments, man. You're really doing a clear job of differentiating between what's what. I think you're just reading off of Wikipedia, but I'm not exactly sure. But that's...
Yeah, that's, I mean, it makes the most sense. I'm using names, descriptive places, scene breaks. I'm using everything that I can, not just what I see.
You're doing good, man. No, that's a good, this is another good sequence because it's once again setting up the world, but now you're getting a little bit more into the graboids. You know, you're starting to see a little bit more what's going on. One thing Tremors does really well, rewatching it, it does the Jaws template of, it doesn't show you the graboids at first for quite a while. And it's kind of just setting up the world, and it's also, you know, using good camera techniques and kind of just different things to show you that there's creatures under the ground, but not really showing you what they are.
Correct. And that is really good, because when I was a kid, I remember being like I was afraid of it because I didn't know what it was. I would always watch the parts where you didn't see it yet. And I was like, man, there's several scenes where they're just staring at the ground and you think you're getting ready to see them. And you're like, what is it going to be?
Yeah, and honestly, for the longest time when I was watching this on cable, I always thought that they cut stuff out. I was like, maybe they cut some of the creatures out or some of the blood or gore. No, they really didn't. And I think that's another reason why it was such a cable, classic, is because you really don't have to cut anything out of the movie to be shown on cable. It's a really, you know, it's not an innocent PG-13, but it's, you know, there's not a lot bad in it at all, other than some, you know, bad language and some death sequences that are pretty innocent. But, you know, they do a good job of not showing the creature, which just, for me at least, I like that, because it just makes the director, I always feel like, have to be more creative with what they're doing. Makes it just more interesting. And a lot of these death sequences in the beginning, to me, are pretty fun, pretty interactive, and I always enjoy them.
You know what I noticed is a lot of random people die, but not a lot. A lot of people die, but it's nobody you care about. Most horror movies, it's like at least a couple people you care about. Like when I just read that segment, some random dude with a jackhammer dies, some old man in hoeing his field, some random dude and some power lines. It's nobody you care about.
First off, Gabe, that is heartless. I like that you are celebrating in these people's deaths. Just because you don't know them don't mean other people don't know who they are and don't love them. So I think you need to really retract that. But off of that, I think you're right that they do a good job of, like I said, this is the classic horror movie trope. You know, you're killing off people that you don't know yet until you get to the main characters.
But one thing I will add that they did really well with Tremors, and unless you really want to do a deep dive on it to uncover all the little details, but when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, is you've got these giant graboids under the ground. Why don't they just take a truck and drive away really quickly? Well, they lay out through the movie why they can't, and then it's like, well, why don't they call? Well, they can't use the radio. Well, Edgar climbed up the power pole. So the graboids try to get them. Well, that took out the power. So that's why the electricians were out there. Well, the graboids took out the electricians. So they've kind of set up the plot of why can't they escape the town. And they did it in a way of being able to kill off some side characters too. So, you know, you look at it, it's like, oh, that's a character we don't care about. But it did have something to say to the story and kind of help advance the plot line of why can't they get away right now.
Yeah, the movie is very well crafted, and it was directed by Ron Underwood. And T-Man, to go back to what you keep talking about, is, you know, it was on cable TV a whole lot, and you know, Ron, he directed City Slickers and Mighty Joe Young, which there are a lot of City Slickers fans. Don't know if there's a lot of Mighty Joe Young fans out there, but he's actually had a really good career. But the majority of his career has been in television. He's been directing ever since, and he's still currently directing, and it's all in TV. And if you think about it, Tremors, again, is the perfect TV movie. And I think some of it is just because of the talent behind it and making it, and I think that falls on Ron Underwood's direction shoulders.
Yeah, Wes, I think, you know, one thing we haven't really talked about, I think we definitely need to, is that, you know, the whole reason we're doing this episode is because, you know, we talked about how Tremors was on cable a lot, but we didn't really talk about how when the movie first came out, it bombed. It was not successful. Didn't do, you know, a lot of money at all, I don't think. Maybe $10 million at the most. And it only was resurrected because of Cable and had a second lease on life. And it became immensely popular through that, creating a direct-to-DVD. You know, they've done lots of movies. I think they're still doing them now. I think the latest one was just on Netflix. And to your point, Wes, I think a lot of that credit does go to Ron Underwood, who, like you said, did City Slickers, which was a big hit. I think this was his first movie and has done some other films. You know, he's been around in Hollywood for quite a while now.
I'm a big City Slickers fan. So, Wes, you found one. And it was, yeah, congrats.
I think he was talking about Mighty Joe Young. That one does it. City Slickers, has a lot of fans. That's a good movie.
but we know how much Tommy loves an ape and a man in a movie. He's talked about it several times. But City Slickers was one of those shows on TNT and USA. So, Wes, you're starting to get the hang of this.
Ron Underwood is like the TNT master.
You know who I thought about last night? As I'm going to bed, I was like, who is the TNT and USA Today master? None other than Michael Bay. I was like, Michael Bay's movies make the perfect TNT. I mean, he's just like firing up those masterpieces. Huh?
The Rock. Yeah, Armageddon, The Rock, Bad Boys, all those are Cable classics. Really, I think what Cable wants, and I know we don't want to keep harking on this, but I kind of like this conversation. That's why I keep bringing it up, is that, you know, what Cable TV really wants is a movie, to Preston's point about why he picked Gabe's list, much to Wes's chagrin there, was that it's a movie that you can pop in 30 minutes into it, and you already know what's happening. You don't really have to think about it. You can have it on the background when you're doing something else. You can just have fun with it. And then if you need to go something else, do 30 minutes later, you can come back. You already know the movie, in other words. And that's what those Michael Bay movies are. You just shut off your brain and enjoy it.
A la Roadhouse.
Roadhouse is another one, for sure. You know what's another cable channel that's sneaky good? Is CMT. And Roadhouse is a CMT classic.
They're always playing Animal House, too.
Yeah, like, CMT has those, like, well, Tremors, I think, is a CMT movie. Oh, is Animal House also?
I think so. I don't know. I think I saw it on CMT the other day. I could be wrong.
I love this cable channel conversation we're having. This is great.
Sitting here thinking how I'm going to get off here and go watch Urban Cowboy after this. Now you bring up CMT movies.
Flip on Cowboy. CMT, watch a little Urban Cowboy.
Urban Cowboy's one of them. John Travolta, like... all those late 70s with John Travolta was in there. Saturday Night Fever. Anyway, okay, we could go on and on.
You know, they saw this, and cable executives are like, how did Firefly not take off? Where did we miss? Anyway.
Well, that's a TV show.
That's a different show. Anyway, so Sequence 3, there is a building. Let me start again. Sequence 3. There's a couple building a house in the middle of nowhere, and a worm eats the man. Then the woman runs into the car. It doesn't matter. The worm eats the car and the woman together. Reba McEntire's in this movie, and so, of course, she gives a speech to fire up the whole grocery store / bar. So it works, so Kevin and his buddy decide to ride their horses to Bixby to save the town. Reba and some other dude just take an SUV instead, and they found... the car under the ground at docks. While riding the horse, the worm eats Fred's horse, so Kevin has to shoot it, and that ticks it off. So then he shoots it 3 more times, and they run into a drainage ditch where the worm runs into the concrete and dies. They do just what you do always when you kill a creature that you know nothing about. They stand 5 inches from its mouth and talk about it. Kevin even finds his ass. The seismologist comes up with the formula that makes absolutely no sense to calculate. There are 3 more of these worms, and they discover that they are sensitive to sound by tapping a board on the ground. What'd you guys think of this sequence?
This is actually where Tremors really starts to pick up. I really like all the events and stuff that happened in this particular sequence. One of the first things that stands out has always been, what is Reba McEntire doing in this movie? Like, she was a famous country artist. She had like literally 11 or 12 albums out at this point. And Ron Underwood, let me back up. Reba McEntire, I found out today, I did not know this, found out today that she actually went out for this movie. It wasn't she was asked to do it, pressured by her publicist, nothing like that. She apparently loved the script.
She sought it out. I like her voice.
Tremors out, And Ron Underwood, the director, even though her being a big movie star, a country star, he didn't want her to be in the movie because he was tired. It's just a kind of a personal preference of his. He was tired of these artists that were trying to come over and do acting because he thought they were all so terrible at it. And then he saw Reba read for it, and he's like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is my – I think her name's Heather in the movie. This is our Heather for Tremors. So I actually honestly think Reba does pretty well in the movie, but it just always stuck out to me like, why the hell is she in this movie?
It's very strange. It adds another flavor to it. Like you said, it's a CMT classic.
It adds a cable afternoon flavor to it. It's like, yes, we got Reba. You know,
Reba's on there. Exactly.
Well, she actually delayed her honeymoon to do this movie. Like, that's how dedicated she was.
It makes me like her more. Wow. Because wouldn't you? I mean, I'd be like, I'm in Tremors. Sorry. Like, this is a big deal.
Yeah. Gabe, if you're asking me, yes. But if you're asking me as a, like, big-time country star, no.
That's true.
You get the right, you know, me nobody versus me country star.
It just makes me respect her because she read the plot. Basically, a bunch of land sharks, and in the West, 14 people have to escape a town on a track hoe, and she's like, "Yeah, that's me. I got to do it."
Give me that movie. Maybe she's just a big creature feature fan, Gabe, like you. You would do it. You're a big creature.
Oh yeah,
creature
like
fan.
That's what I'm saying. In a heartbeat, like I'd be like, "Oh, I know this is important, honey."
You know, but Reba went out for Crawl.
She wanted to be in it.
She's my hero now. Like, I've not really listened to a lot of her music. I mean, I know some songs, but now I'm going to listen. She has something to say, and I want to hear.
Well, back, like, on more of a serious note, when it comes to the movie, you start to hear, like, the sound editing, the sound mixing of this movie. And I'd not really paid attention to it much before, but apparently the various sounds they use in the movie have become extremely popular. They have used like the graboid sounds of them going through the dirt and, you know, the sounds that they make and the little snake-like creatures and stuff like that. They've used them in Predator 2, Starship Troopers, Ants, Eight-Legged Freaks, Kong Skull Island. I just found that so interesting. They just reuse the same sounds that they set up for the Tremors in various movies ever since.
I'm just having a side thought because they never say in the movie where Graboids are from, but Starship Troopers, that's another great worm. You think they came from that planet?
Now, that right there is a little bit more close maybe than the Brokeback Mountain universe you brought up earlier. I could definitely see them being from the Starship Troopers universe.
Well, we're getting into the multiverse of Brokeback Mountain now. We're expanding this thing.
Hey, I love a good multiverse of Tremors. That's a great point. That's a great point, Preston. See, this is the hard-hitting inside info we bring Preston on for.
Yes.
And I do want to say, to Wes's point, though, that's really cool. I didn't know that they used the sound with the sound editing and the different effects that they use. So that's cool to know that. The movie has that lasting effect from kind of a visual movie. It's not very pretty or, you know, visually appealing to a sense because it's in a desert. But rewatching it, I forgot how cool the scene is with the doctor and his wife after he gets killed and she gets in the car. Mm-hmm. And it's very just cool. Out in the desert and the car lights kind of rise up and shoot to the sky and then they go out one by one. I forgot how cool that scene was.
It's excellent. Yeah. I agree. One of the best.
Man, that's what I was going to say. I was going to – Preston, this is why I bring you on for your insights, but I don't want them to be too good. That's my favorite scene in the entire movie. And I was just
this is what happens when you're the narrator. You know, your color commentators take all the good stuff.
Your stuff gets stolen. That's my favorite scene, but you can take it.
Okay, I appreciate that.
No problem.
After he's already taken it, you can take it.
Yeah.
I will say during this sequence, I think it's the first time where Kevin Bacon starts repeating himself twice. And he always says,
Some big.
Yeah, he starts off like soft. And then the second line is really handsome. What does he say? He says, We killed it.
I want to ask you guys this. Was that an actor's choice or was that in the script? Or was Kevin like, hey, I've got something, Ron. Let me try this. I've got an idea.
He showed up at Ron's office and acted it out. He's like, look what I'm going to do.
He showed up and threw the script up in the air and just said, no, I got this.
I got it.
Let me do my thing.
But when he said those things, he had to say it twice. You know, I got this. But back to this segment real quick. You know, this I agree, Wes. This is, you know, you're really getting into some good Tremors stuff now. And I love the sequence where, you know, the two main guys get into the, you know, they first encounter the Tremor, you know, with the horses, and then they have to run away, and it, you know, kind of knocks itself out. That's a great sequence there. And another thing that I noticed rewatching it was just how, and I think we kind of talked about this a little bit, was just how much interplay those two characters have. And the dialogue is really funny, really snappy. They just have a great interplay, and they're just fun characters to be around. And so I think that's another secret to the film, is Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward are just really good in the roles.
Yeah, I think they play really, really, really well together. And I think this movie made me fall in love with the creature feature. I was thinking about that while you were talking. I was like, you know, because I didn't really watch Jaws first, because I think I watched this first. And I just was like, man, that's so fun. You know, I don't know. I think this was my first creature feature. Was it yours, Tommy?
Man, I would say, well, I don't know. Probably Jaws was my first, but I would say this was definitely one of those. This was right there with it, because this is just one of those movies. And I know I keep talking about it, but for me, this, I mean, this is true for me. You know, it was on so much as a kid.
Like, I maybe just remember it the most.
Yeah, I just remember it the most. It was just on all the time. And it was one of those movies that your parents would always let you watch because, like I said, it's just kind of, it's not very violent. It's PG-13. So I think it's definitely one of those films. I think this movie did introduce the creature features to for a lot of people.
Well, you can't talk about Tremors without talking about Jaws, because Tremors wouldn't really exist without Jaws, because like Gabe was already saying, this is kind of the land version of Jaws. You know, they do rip Jaws off. And we could even say pay homage to it, which I like better because I like this movie. So they really pay homage a lot to Jaws in this, even down to the poster. You know, the poster for Tremors is amazing. But again, it's just ripping off the concept of the Jaws poster with the graboid. And I don't understand why the graboid has shark teeth in it on the poster when it, you know, it doesn't have that. It's got the snakes in the movie.
The Jaws.
I can say the answer to that. The reason why it's got teeth in the posters is that's the theatrical poster. So they, of course, that's the poster you see when you go in the theater, and they wanted to keep the reveal of the creature kind of a surprise on what it looks like. So the actual creature in the poster is like one of the tongues with a little more teeth. So it's not the actual creature. They did that so the reveal could be a surprise during the movie.
Makes sense.
Bringing that deep Tremors knowledge.
Well, we also get a little bit more of Finn Carter, the actress Finn Carter, who plays Rhonda in this, you know, the seismologist. And I was like, what the heck is she? What else has she been in? Because she has such pretty blue eyes, and she's not bad in this movie. I mean, is a pretty good actress. And I looked her up. I was like, wonder what she's in now. And honestly, the reason why I looked her up is I was like, wonder if I could get her or one of these side characters to come on Real Talk and interview.
Oh, man.
And I realized she just recently stole a car and 14 counts of possessing stolen credit cards and has been in jail. So I don't think we're going to get Finn Carter on.
We should know where to find her.
Actually, we probably can now.
Actually, we probably that can. Helps. We can call the jail. They can't get away from us.
We could be her one call.
In fact, we know exactly where she is and when she has free time to talk on the phone. And so I guess we'll move on, because there's nowhere else to go from that, to sequence 4. Probably my favorite sequence of the entire movie. Val, or Kevin, as I've been calling him, and Rhonda sleep together on a rock because of the looming Tremor and their third wheel, Fred. They decide to escape. And to do so, they're going to have to pole vault from rock to rock until they get back to the truck. Insert the best damn pole vaulting montage complete with 80s music in a movie ever. They pole vault into the truck, and Kevin punches a worm in the tentacle. Back at town, the annoying basketball kid gets eaten, almost eaten, and a random girl, Mindy, on a pogo stick also gets almost eaten. Kevin saves both of them, but then a Tremor pops out of nowhere and almost eats Rhonda. It's okay. Kevin stabs it in the face with a pickaxe. Next, a Tremor busts through the door of the store and eats the owner, Chang. Kevin gets free beer for life. They all get on their roofs. What do you guys think of this segment?
Well, I was just going to say there, other than the giant worms in the city, there's two things that I find super unrealistic about this movie. First off is they sleep out in the desert at night without any covers and just wake up like it's okay. The desert gets freezing cold at night. So that's my first problem. Second problem is Kevin Bacon doesn't shave the entire movie and he still has a baby butt face. So those are just two things I'll say where they're starting to lose me in the movie and I can't find it realistic.
I thought you were going to say something about the conveniently placed pole vault poles right next to the rock that they get
stuck. That was more where I was going. Preston's even getting down to the, like, he didn't even have a 5 o'clock shadow. Like, something is not right about this movie.
I've never really been into the desert to know if pole vaults exist out there, but I do know it gets cold.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out where the heck, like, why are they right beside that those boulders? That's very convenient. Definitely some movie magic going on there. But yeah, this is a great segment. You know, just this whole part where they're in the town, they're arguing. This is great Tremor stuff. Like, it's coming up from the ground in the store. I love all this stuff. I love the sequence where they're running along like the porch and the wood stuff starts coming out behind them. So just so many really good little sequences. And I think this is where Ron Underwood really shines is in these sequences because, you know, to your point, Wes, earlier about Jaws, they don't show the Tremors a whole lot. A lot of this is just camera work and just practical special effects. You know, this isn't CGI. This is just in, you know, while they're filming at special effects, a lot of dust coming out, a lot of camera work, just a lot of cool stuff that I think holds up really well still.
Yep. If they would have, you know, these days they would try to do everything CGI and show you too much of the monster and stuff like this. And again, I just think the practical effects, they went out. But Gabe, that's not just some random little girl on a pogo stick. That's Lex from Jurassic Park. Yeah. And you also got Grandpa from Three Ninjas, Victor Wong, as the store owner there. So Grandpa doesn't fare so well against the Tremors like he did against the evil dude in Three Ninjas. But one of the things that cracked me up about watching this movie this last time is whenever they get back to the store, okay, they pole vaulted out of there, they drive to the town, they're warning everybody about what's going on, and then all of a sudden the Coke machine or whatever that is, the little
Pepsi.
Coke ice box, Pepsi box, starts going off and starts shaking. So what does Kevin Bacon do? Something any man would do. He runs over and jumps on top of it and lays on it and then starts screaming at everybody to pull it out while at the same time making it more difficult for them to pull it away from the wall. What the hell is Kevin Bacon doing here? I was just dying laughing watching that scene, him just flailing on top of this vibrating Pepsi machine.
Oh, man, that's like the one scene I remember from years ago being at the apartment. We were already cracking up at Kevin Bacon saying all of his lines twice. And all of a sudden he jumps on a Coke machine that's not operating right. And we're all just waiting for him to say, jump on it, jump on it. And that became like a running joke for our Best Buy for years. Is just
jump on it. Yep.
Jump on it. Yes.
It's a ridiculous scene. It doesn't even, like, what is he doing? I don't know. But I got to say, you know, as much as we're criticizing him, I feel like I would have the same response. I feel like I would do the exact same thing. So I can't really hate on him too much.
I could see that.
I mean, what else is he going to do? Come on, guys. Tremors are out there. What else is he supposed to do?
He's just supposed to get behind it and just pull the plug on it, turn it off.
No, you guys are thinking rationally. When you got graboids coming out from the... No. You guys would jump on it, too. I know you would.
Go ride the Coke machine.
Jump on it, guys. We got to jump on it.
But oh, I love how they drive, you know, the Tremors kind of drive them up to the roof. And everybody's out there and they're all on top of the roofs. The one thing that's a little weird is they get on top of the roof of the store. And that thing, you want to talk about, it literally looked like ocean waves whenever the Tremors were attacking the store. Did y'all see that? Store would have been falling apart, but instead it's like some kind of weird rubber building that it turns into all of a sudden, where it's like stretching and bouncing and everything. It was hilarious.
I was trying to figure out exactly what the Graboids, Tremors, I'm going back and forth on the names now, what they're doing with these buildings exactly. And I'm not a building expert in the cars stuff. They're like, I just don't understand it. Like, are they building holes? Like, are they digging underneath it? Are they chipping away at it? Because they just do all sorts of stuff, but they don't really explain any of it. Like you said, Wes, but you got the roof that's like a ocean now. You've got things that they're doing with the cars where they're like, I guess they're bringing them underneath. But what are they doing exactly? Are they eating the dirt? It's not explained. I need more explanation.
Gabe, is this the sequence? Are we in the sequence where they turn the lawnmower on? Is that where we're at?
No, we're not to the lawnmower yet.
Okay. All right. I'll save that.
You ready for that? You want me to tell you when that happens?
Yeah, do it. Do it. I got you. We're ready.
All right. We'll move on to sequence 5. Apparently, Reba and that random guy drove only 500 feet in the last 30 minutes of the movie because they can see everyone standing on the roofs from where they're at. So what do they start? What do they do? They start some giant loud machine just for funsies. A trimmer busts through their wall, but fortunately, Reba and her buddy have a giant wall full of shotguns to protect them perfectly, and they have a giant old elephant gun to shoot the trimmer to death. A trimmer knocks Nestor off his camper and eats him. Then a trimmer bites the grocery store and the roof caves in. Val and Fred play rock, paper, scissors to decide who's going to run for the bulldozer. Fred ends up being the one who's supposed to do it, but Kevin tricks him and makes the run anyway. A worm heads for Kevin, so Rhonda breaks the water pipe and saves him, and the worm comes after her and eats her ladder. What do you think of this sequence? And, Wes, this is where they release the mower.
Well, this is probably my favorite sequence of the movie. There's a whole lot going on. Of all the scenes that stuck out to me after the first time that I watched Tremors was this scene where you've got Reba and you've got Michael Gross. It's Bert and Heather. All right, Bert and Heather are preppers, right? And they're kind of teasing them throughout the movie about them being preppers and things like that. Well, they have a full arsenal, like an entire army's worth of guns and stuff down in the basement. And it's the most outrageous, hilarious scene with that Graboid burst through their basement wall and they just unload so much ammo. What's so funny is that the trimmer can break through the wall, but it has to stop right there. Like, it can't go any further and it just sits there.
Doesn't know how to go without the turnaround.
I love that scene so much.
I would say that scene, I think almost makes the movie. Like, it's so good and it's so funny. And like, it's just so like, because the whole movie, you're like, how are we going to defeat it? And you're like, yes, everybody's cheering. Without that scene, I don't know if Tremors works as well as it does.
No, it's great. You're like, yes, they've got a wall full of shotguns. What is this amazing place?
When they do the pan over and they got all the guns, it's so great. They're like, throw me the mag, and they're like, they've got shotguns, machine guns. He pulls out an elephant gun. It's flare gun. It's got to be one of the best. Like, just, it reminds me between that scene and the scene in Predator where they unload their arsenal against the forest. Those are my two favorite, like, unload our whole arsenal against something scenes.
It's so funny because they're shooting it with 12 gauges and it doesn't really affect it. Then Reba shoots it in the mouth of the flare gun and that does the trick. But it's just a really funny sequence. I don't know. That's the part that made me crack up.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, this whole sequence is really great. Like, between Kevin running out. I love how they keep doing the rock, paper, scissors. That's a really good just character interplay that we didn't talk much about. That, you know, I always like when movies does that, where they bring something about characters and they keep doing it throughout the movie. That's like, you know, kind of a screenwriting tip that they always bring in. But I just like that. And then, you know, it's great when he has to pause. There's just this whole sequence is great. He finally gets on it. And then, of course, he cheers. There's that famous gif of Kevin Bacon cheering as he's rolling along in the cat.
But I've got to talk about in this sequence too. I love when the Graboid goes into Bert's basement. And what's he say? You broke into the wrong damn rec room, asshole. Yeah. Like, and then when y'all talk about when he was panning over with the guns, they've got, you know, AKs and ARs and shotguns and rifles and
pistols and they're going through everything. Why is the only gun in a case the elephant gun? It's like, oh, all these guns can be out in the open. But yeah, the single load elephant gun needs to be locked up just for safety. But a funny thing with this scene, too, is I think this is probably one of the only scenes I can notice that they've got the dub over when Kevin Bacon's on the roof and he says, like, good job, Bert, but you got two more mother humpers coming over because they already used their one F word. When they killed the first one. So this is like the first scene that I remember that you could actually like realize, yeah, we know what that's supposed to be, but that's not just for the made for TV. That's the entire versions. They had a dub over.
I mentioned the lawnmower earlier and I really just kind of love this as a device, like a plot device to, for them to get off the roof and kind of collect everybody by sending the lawnmower out and having the trimmer chase it. My one question is, did y'all see one blade of grass the entire movie? Why do they have a lawnmower? What are they mowing? There is nothing to mow.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there is grass because I've actually got a scene paused in front of me and there's grass behind it. But sorry to ruin that. But I would say to forget the grass, though. Let's just say there is no grass around there. I would just say they just got all sorts of junk there. That whole town is full of junk. Like, they've got just crap everywhere.
I didn't see grass. I think Wes has noticed some genius things. Like, the worm can only go, like, that amount through the basement, and there's no grass. They just have a mower sitting there just for fun. I think I know the house you're talking about, though, T-Man, with the grass. Man, I like Wes's point without knowing that, though.
Well, no, I had a scene pause where it's actually earlier in the movie, so it's not around the town. Yeah, there's not grass around the town.
Oh, good.
But there's grass somewhere around there. But I think really the town just has junk.
All
sorts of places everywhere. Yep.
It's actually just a landfill. They just built the town in the middle of a landfill.
It honestly looks like it. I'm not joking. You know, like I said, we apologize if anybody's town looks like this. We really do.
No, because I grew up in a town right next to a town that looked like this and spent a ton of time in it.
Wait a minute. So you are apologizing or you're not?
No, I'm apologizing, but I'm. What do you mean? Like, I understand. I like these areas. Sure. Like,
oh, am I, like, you like them?
Yeah, these small towns in Kentucky that like have random like cars and stuff in their front yards. Like, I know people from those towns. I'm from Kentucky.
You need to do a lawnmower at those towns.
I'm from Kentucky too. I don't like them. That's just me, though.
Well, see, I don't have to apologize if I like the people, T-Man. I don't have anything to apologize for.
You have to apologize for doing this damn movie. That's what you got to apologize for.
That's fair.
No, I'm joking. All right, moving on.
Kevin saves everyone in town with a bulldozer and a trailer on the back. Reba and her man make some bombs. They throw a bomb at a trimmer, and it really pisses it off. They head towards the mountains, but the trimmers make a trap and sink the bulldozer. They get stuck on a rock, and there's a long shot of everyone bored and contemplating death. They decide to fish for trimmers with lasso bombs. It works. A trimmer eats it. Guts fall everywhere. And that's how the next one goes down. One to go. What'd you guys think of this sequence?
Wait, what? That's the end of the sequence?
Yeah, well, I think that sequence needs some work, but I know,
I know
we're at the movie.
I like how Gabe threw us a curveball there. He was like, you know what? These other ones have been long. This one's going to be short.
But when somebody mentioned it earlier, so typically with these creature feature movies or with slasher films or other types of horror movies, you always start with like a big group of people, and it's just typically one by one the group gets picked off. What I like that Tremors does different is, yes, we started getting those secondary characters kind of killed at the beginning of the movie, but we have a lot of kind of main characters for this movie. We got Bert and Heather. We got Melvin. We got the woman and her kid. We've got the main three. So there's a big group, and they're all trying to get together somewhere. You know, they're trying to get away as this big group. And I just think that's a very interesting dynamic, and it's so different than what you typically see in these types of movies. So I wanted to make sure that I threw that out there.
Yeah.
T-Man, Wes, I think it's a good point. Are you complaining about my sequences, T-Man?
Well, no, I like your secret. First off, I complimented you earlier. And now just this time, I like what you did. You just threw us for a curveball. Like, yeah, I liked it, though.
I made it short because I wanted to focus on these fishing lasso bombs.
I like it. No, you did a great job. And to your point, Wes, I think you make a great point about that, because I think that's another reason why Tremors worked so well for so many people. And it became such a lot of different people like this movie that usually wouldn't like this type of movie, because it's not super gory and there's not a lot of characters that die. Like, yeah, people die in it, but there's still lots of good characters left. It's not mean-spirited, which some horror movies can be. It's just like kind of fun to watch. And I think anybody can watch. So I think that's a good point.
It's what I refer to as kind of like your introductory horror. You know, it's something that, you know, you're not going to sit down and like a kid turns 14. It's like, all right, let's settle in for some Black Coat's Daughter. You know, it's like these are the types of movies like this and Ghostbusters and several other ones that are kind of those like fun horror films that are good to, you know, show like early teens or, you know, maybe 10, 11, 12 around those ages.
Yeah, Tremors is a great movie for teenagers, early teens, absolutely, for sure.
Does it remind you, it could have been a Goosebump book, I feel like, and I would have enjoyed it.
It definitely could have been like a preteen, you know, type of book, for sure, because it has, you know, I think they would have
all the drinking.
Yeah, there are some things about it, but about this sequence, though, this is a really great sequence, because I love that they're driving out there in the cat, and then they're like, what are the Tremors doing? Are they plotting? What are they doing out there? And of course they get them and they fall right into their trap. And another thing, when I was watching it, just made me realize, it's like, and I know we've already talked about this, but they just do a really good job of using practical effects. And all you need in that sequence is to see them off, because you've already seen them. You see them out in the distance and you just see dust off the grounds. And if a movie is working and it's a good director, that's all you need in that scene. You don't have to see him again. You can use your imagination. You already know what's happening. So I think the movie had done such a good job up to that point that that's why that works so well.
Well, I want to say, I think it's funny we talk about Tremors being a horror movie, because it's funny, because I guess technically it is, but if you look at where horror was at in the 90s and Tremors would fill that, you know, creature feature flex slot, and you look at, you know, what kids watch nowadays, like, I think if you showed a 14-year-old Tremors, he would probably laugh you out of the room, like, oh, you think this is horror? Like, I'm gonna go watch Squid Games. You know, it seemed like it's all kind of shifted to a different degree, to where it's almost like a comedy now. It's because it doesn't really take itself seriously, but it definitely laid a lot of groundwork on, you know, how do you get that element of, you know, impending doom without, you know, showing. I think it has things to be said on that respect. I don't know if I'd classify it as a horror anymore, though.
It's definitely a creature feature. It's like light horror, for sure.
I mean, it scares me to death. I'm scared to walk on dirt, you know, now because of Tremors, like, you know, for a little bit after watching it each time.
So, Gabe, where does this segment end?
Well, this segment ends with them killing Tremor number 3. They throw the lasso bomb, it eats it, and then it explodes and guts fall on everybody.
Nice. When I was watching this, I did have this feeling. I was like, you know what? I feel like that's a Gabe thing. Like, if we would have been out there, you would have been doing that. Is that fair, Gabe, or not?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would have had a plan like that, but I wouldn't have had the materials to complete the plan or the ability to throw a lasso.
Well, right, you had the idea. You're an idea man.
I'm an idea guy.
Need somebody else to have the ability. Execution.
I can't make a bomb. I don't know, like they're Reba and that guy are just like sitting there and they're like, oh, we've got the exact ingredients to a bomb. Oh, we got a spare 5 minutes before they're gonna pick us up on their bulldozer. Let's make 30 of these.
Let's just make some pipe bombs. Yeah. Let's just get off.
Oh, we've got these perfectly cut pipes, and these wonderful lids for them.
We do got to talk a little bit about, I know we already talked about, but man, Tremors was the first movie that introduced me to the survivalist, you know, the prepper. You know, I didn't know that was a thing. Of course, I wasn't old enough to be, you know, to know about like Ruby Ridge and all of that stuff that was happening in the 90s. But I just thought it was interesting. I was like, really? People do that? And then, of course, 20 years later, it became much more of a thing with doomsday preppers. But
let me ask you a real question, T-Man.
Stay ahead of the curve.
Let me ask you a real question, T-Man and Preston and Wes. You walk into a guy's house. You're having a lovely evening. It's in the living room. You guys like have a dinner or something. He's like, hey, man, you want to go see my rec room? You go downstairs, and he has a wall full of shotguns like that. Are you frightened? Like, because if that ever happened to me, I'd get out.
I mean, this is just like going over to our buddy Josh Oates' house.
So we've got a friend that actually does that. I think it depends on how well you know the person. Like, if you know them well and you just know that's their interest, then it's not a big deal. But if, like, it's just a random person, and then, you know, maybe that could unnerve you a little bit. So I think it depends on the context and the situation, Gabe.
I've now figured out I think this movie has been a really big influence on our buddy Josh's life.
This is exactly. He is that guy. He is Michael Gross.
Well, I feel like, because I've lived in kind of multiple parts of the country now in some different states and cities. So, you know, some people use seashells for wall art. Some people go to Home Goods and buy some pictures and prints. And I mean, in Kentucky, we just use our shotguns and our ARs. That's our wall art. So, you know, yeah. It seems like it was pretty normal growing up.
Yeah, I can see how you could think that. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, the caliber of wall that they had. If I walked in somebody's basement, I would be a little worried.
But let's talk about this. So they've got all these guns on the wall. They've just spent an hour making pipe bombs on the roof of their house. And before they jump in the back of the tractor, they have a 2-minute conversation on which rifle they're going to take with them.
Not that one. It can't penetrate the ground.
You're not getting in a Toyota Corolla with 10 people to go up a mountain. Like, you're in the back of a trailer. The other rifle can fit too.
You just grab the whole shelf. Everybody can have
taken everything in the basement.
Yeah, that is a good point, Preston. I mean, now Wes ruined it. Wes ruined the movie with the trimmer couldn't move more. Preston brought logic into the gun situation. All right. Well,
you're learning a lot tonight.
I am. Let's just go ahead and finish up this movie. Let's move on to sequence 7. They try the same thing they did on the last trimmer, but in the words of Kevin Bacon, this trimmer ain't dumb. They throw a lasso bomb at the trimmer, but he spits it out back at him, and maybe the most ridiculous scene of the entire movie, it explodes not only that bomb, but all the bombs at the same time. So Val, Fred, and Rhonda are forced off the rock. Kevin and them decide to make a run for the pea cliff from the beginning of the movie. Kevin sets off a bomb right at the edge of the cliff and jumps out of the way at the last minute, forcing the worm to fall from the cliff. Kevin and Fred are heroes. They have new aspirations. National Geographic magazine. Kevin kisses the girl, and boom, end of movie. Cue the Reba McEntire music.
There you go, Gabe. Gabe's getting good at these segments. Yeah, that's a great ending. I mean, how do you not love this ending? It's amazing.
One thing that I've never really understood about it is you get Finn and Val and Earl, they get blown off of the rock, and then Val and Earl are literally side by side. Like, you see it from afar. They're side by side. Finn is over there all by herself. So the Graboid gets the guys trapped. But why is Finn still just standing out there by herself with her hands up? She's not, the trimmer has the other ones trapped. Why did she not go get back on the rock? She's just standing out there with her hands up, just by herself. Never understood that.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. That whole ending really doesn't make a lot of sense, if we're being completely honest. I do like how Kevin Bacon is just like, he's just standing there, and he's like, don't move, don't move, and he jumps at the last second. It's fantastic.
I didn't understand the end. Like, I didn't understand why he had to throw the, like, they're all running towards the pea cliff, and he's like, he feels like he has to throw the bomb, like, right where they're standing, and then break. Like, what was the point in that?
I feel like the ending kind of shows, like, his incompetence paying off, because I don't think he was necessarily trying to throw the bomb behind the Graboid to make it speed up to shoot off the cliff. I think he was trying to throw it in front to make it blow up on it, and he just couldn't throw it, so it went behind him, and somehow things have always worked out for him throughout his life, that here's another mistake that somehow worked out.
I think you're right there, you know, and I think you make a lot of good observations. Just, you know, Tremors is really about the common man and about being underestimated and about how you know, the blue collar worker can rise above their station, and how the proletariat doesn't truly own, you know, the means of production. It's really about the common person being having the ability to do that. So I really think Tremors has a lot to speak to those type of themes.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this movie is super deep.
It's deep, right,
guys? This is what happens when you get invited to your Nashville Filmmakers Guild or whatever.
This is the type of stuff we talk about.
Yeah.
Let me tell a quick story real quick. And T-Man, I don't think you're going to like the story, but it was cute. It was too cute. And it honestly cracked me up. So I had to share it with our Real Talk listeners. So I'm watching Tremors the other night. I fall asleep during the movie, which I often do that now. And I woke up with my son in my lap. He has been watching Tremors for a little bit. I didn't know that he came in there. He just woke up, got out of his bed, came in, got on the couch with me. I was sleeping. Tremors was on. So I wake up and I'm in kind of like really in a fog. It's middle of the night. Liam's 2 years old, and Liam goes, "Dada, poo poo," when like kind of held his hand out like that. And I'm like, what is he talking about? And I just kind of put it away, turned the movie off, and went to sleep. So when I go to finish the movie the next night, I'm watching it, and we get to the end of that cliff scene, which is where he said that. And I realized that he thought that Tremor coming through the wall and falling was poop. And I just busted out laughing because I was like, oh my gosh, yes, it actually looks like that. And he was just so confused. So I just thought that was hilarious. Sorry, well, T-Man, I know you don't like those stories, but it does look like it.
At least we saved the bodily function humor to the end of the episode. So people want to listen. They at least got to the end.
You go from a synopsis of a proletarian government control and all this other crap to poop jokes. So I love it.
Yeah, that was planned.
No, but that is funny, and it's true, and that's where the mind of a kid will go, because it is kind of obvious in a way. And the final thing I'll say, I forgot to mention, is that finally the lead characters do kiss at the end. And what was up with Fred Ward being the whole time like trying to hook them up? Wasn't he
like
kind of
on the
creeper?
Rock?
Yeah.
On the Rock, he's like at Officer Third Wheel. He's like winking at him and looking at him. They all pee simultaneously.
So weird.
They're like, hey, everybody has to pee, and they all pee at the same time, and then they like sleep together. And then like at the end, like he like looks away and he's like sees him looking at him. He's like, go ahead. He's like nudging for him. And like once Kevin gets the okay, then he goes for it.
It's the Brokeback Mountain prequel. If you go back and watch a thing in that, you look at everything entirely different.
It really does. Now, Preston, all right. So, Preston, we've done Mortal Kombat. We've done Tremors. What's the next movie we're bringing you on for?
What's the next movie of the Prestonverse?
Yeah, this is the Preston.
I've got to think. Honestly, now that y'all brought up Starship Troopers, I do think that's a fun one to do.
That would be a good one. I would do that one for sure.
Or that's what was that other John Travolta movie? Battlefield Earth.
Grease.
Oh my god.
That's what we should do right there. Battlefield Earth. We should just do a live watch of Battlefield Earth. See how many people tunes in.
I'm actually all for that.
Or Brokeback Mountain. Whatever you guys want to do, I'm game for it.
Just do all three at once.
Three at once at the same time. Each one of us will have our own movie to do it, and we'll all talk at the same time. We'll see how it turns out.
Probably not much worse than this episode.
I'd be surprised if anybody's still listening, to be honest.
I don't think people usually are listening by the end, Preston, so it's all right.
I do want to say one last thing about Tremors as we close the episode out. But you guys thought Big Willie was so innovative with his singing about movies that he's in and all this stuff.
Yeah.
He just ripped off Reba McEntire.
Oh, he ripped off Reba.
That's what it was. She was the original Big Willie. She's in there. She's got a song at the end of singing about big worms, like shaking
her
the earth and eating
people. Big worms. That would be amazing if it was, though. She really should have done that. Like, can you imagine if she would have sung a song about, like, tremors? I'm trembling about tremors. Something like that. You know? That's what she should have done.
Trimmer, bloomer. My heart is like, I'm just.
No, she's not a rapper, Gabe. It's got to be country.
Oh, sorry.
Trembling about Trimmer.
Trembling. You know, got the Patsy Cline. I'm feeling like a Patsy Cline vibe at this point. We'll work on it. We'll have to get that song made.
Yeah, I'm sure.
One thing I will kind of hit on, I know we're probably getting to the end of this, but going back to the creature itself is, I don't think we really touched on it, but I know from us talking with Mortal Kombat and stuff, I'm really big on practical effects, and I really miss that for movies in the 90s. But I do think the way they did the creature design and, like, the look of it, and you just kind of see the texture when you watch on TV, and, like, its mouth looks like some type of horn. I think the creature design and the practical effects are really cool. Like, I'd love to know how big that final creature was, because it looked like it had weight when it was falling. It doesn't look like it's just some little small little toy they dropped. But, you know, I do like how they did the creature. They made something new. They ran with it. And just to actually make it look like it could actually exist and have weight.
Yeah, it's a great creature. It really is, actually. And I was actually noticing when I was rewatching is it holds up well. You know, when the little snakes come out, they're a little goofy now. They're always, like, sniffing around the dirt or something. I don't know what they're doing half the time. But the big creature itself, I think, is pretty effective. And especially, like, the sequence where they raid the home and they got the big shootout. That's really well done. And for a low-budget film, because this movie didn't cost a whole lot, the creature effects are great. And once again, it uses the shark technique of don't overshow the creature. They do a great job of that. And it speaks to volumes of it holding up. And, you know, one thing we also didn't really talk about, and Gabe, I don't know if you want to mention any of it, is, you know, this movie created a universe of Tremors films. I mean, there are like 7 or 8 of them at this point.
I think I looked up, there was actually 5 Tremors films. Or no, 6 Tremors films. There's 4. There's 4 sequels and 1 prequel, and there's a show. Correct?
I think so. Yeah, I think
they were going to make a 7th, but they. You're right. They didn't get it made. So,
well, they were going to do a new show with Kevin Bacon. Is like, you know how they do like reboots where they like. All that other stuff didn't happen, and here's, like, the series, like, 20 years later. They didn't greenlight it, though. But I know they just had another movie on Netflix, so it speaks volume. I mean, I know there aren't, like, theatrically released films, but still, it's pretty cool that this movie created, you know, a franchise of sorts.
Yeah, a pretty large one for the movie that it is, in my opinion. And I like that it did. I like that there's a Tremorverse. And I feel like Preston is deep into the Tremorverse, but he's a little embarrassed, so he didn't want to, like, reveal all of that on the show. He wanted to act like he just watched it.
Yeah, that's true. I do feel like Preston dresses up like Kevin Bacon's character sometimes.
Yeah, and he communicates on the dark web with all the people that love the Tremorverse as well.
Well, I'll make sure when I communicate that I say everything in lowercase letters, and then I type the exact same thing in uppercase letters right after it, just so they understand I'm serious. But I did look up real quick, because I'm the type, if I see something and it piques my interest, I want to kind of go down a rabbit hole on Google and stuff. So the people who did the creature for this was Amalgamated Dynamics. Before Tremors, their only other big filmography was Teen Witch. Since Tremors, here's some movies they did. Mortal Kombat, surprise.
Great movie. Hey.
Jumanji, oh. Mars Attacks, Starship Troopers, X-Files, then all the way into 2000, Spider-Man, Alien vs. Predator, Requiem. It looks like this movie was kind of their big ticket to get them where they're at now, too. So that's just kind of cool to see that this movie sparked a lot of careers and opportunities for other people as well.
Well, it makes sense. You know, it was, once again, it was a low budget, so they probably couldn't go with one of the established outfits. Got these up and comers, and, you know, they made a name for themselves, did a great job, and they've had a great career since then.
We're learning that the Tremors really changed the lives and the world for many people. And I can't think of what better way to end the episode. So, Preston, thank you for taking your time coming on the show. I know you don't have a podcast. You don't have any way for people to follow you there. Maybe just give out your address and people will follow you in actual life.
Maybe your home phone number.
Well, we're at the point now in the podcast where I don't think anybody listens. So I'll go ahead. Here's my credit card number, Social Security. No, thank you all for having me on again. I really enjoy this. So I love giving y'all grief and crap and being sarcastic and stuff. I love Tremors. I'm glad we got a chance to finally talk about it, because I don't know how everybody looks back on things in their past, but you know, looking back when we all worked together at Best Buy, a lot of inside jokes stem from Tremors. So
you can follow us on Facebook at all the stuff. Wes, can you do this part? I don't know any of the things.
and leave all this in too.
Yeah, I will. Well,
Gabe's trying to come up with something. Follow us on something. Preston, what's your address again? Just follow Preston's address.
Just look him up on Facebook. LinkedIn.
You're going to get a bunch of Facebook and LinkedIn likes and friend requests. It's like, who are these people? Preston, I got to say, man, thanks for coming on again. We always love having you on. Loving catching up with you. And we're going to do that Starship Troopers idea for sure.
All right, audience. That was an episode that we did. We just want to thank you, as always, for your support and listening to us. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that. We're on Twitter at @real_cast. That's R-E-E-L. You can find us on Facebook, which is, you can find Preston over there. We're always talking about something. It's just Real Talk, a movie podcast. We're on Instagram. That's Official Real Talk Podcast. And as Gabe said, for us, that's a wrap.